The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
This is the Secular Brothers Podcast. We want truth, no more lies, no more lies. We speak how we feel, no more compromise. Take away our freedom, huh? Now, this is America, land of the brave and a home of the free, and a country full of people feel just like me. Land of the brave and a home of the free, and a country full of people feel just like me.
Hey, welcome to the Secular Brothers Podcast. I'm Jordan Seculo.
Logan Seculo.
We have a very special guest joining us today.
Yeah, that's pretty exciting.
I think a lot of you will know him or know the books, maybe the TV show. Jack Carr is joining us. And Jack is, again, a former Navy SEAL who led special operations teams, a team leader, platoon commander, troop commander, task unit commander, 20 years in naval special warfare, from an enlisted SEAL sniper to a junior officer leading assault and sniper teams in Iraq and Afghanistan, is most recently commanding a special operations task unit in the most Iranian-influenced section of southern Iraq throughout the tumultuous drawdown of U.S. forces in Iraq. Retired from active duty in 2016 and started as an author. And these books have become, again, one of the books, the first book, The Terminal List, the number one New York Times bestseller. But he's on book number six. The Terminalist is the number one show on Amazon.
Yeah.
Where Chris Pratt plays the protagonist.
Yeah. Billions or billion plus minutes streamed. Obviously, you've all heard those because it was sort of, it came out of nowhere and became this just massive following. And obviously, Chris Pratt starred in that. So to connect it all together, Jack wrote the original book and then executive producer on the series. And hopefully, you know, pending the strike ending, there'll be a lot more Terminalist coming.
Yep.
But that's not why we're here today. We got a brand new.
Yeah, I want to tell you right off the bat, Jack, great. Your PR team, great job. Because one of our colleagues is Tulsi Gabbard, and she got one of the pre-books. And I remember, I think she went into the water in Hawaii. She had the waterproof casing. And so I saw it on her story, and I contacted her, and I contacted one of our guys. I said, we got to get Jack on.
Yeah.
And so, great job there. Let me ask you, so I think a lot of our folks, they're going to be familiar with The Terminal List or some of your books. So let's go to the new book, Only the Dead. So I've got it in my hands now. It's out now wherever books are sold, wherever, and it's available now. Tell us about the new one.
Well, this one is, each one of my books has a different theme. That first one was really revenge without constraint. The next one, True Believer, which we're hopefully, pending the writer's strike, turning into another series here. That one was a story of violent redemption. The third one is a story of the dark side of man through the dynamic of hunter and hunted in Savage Son. This one right here is a story of truth and consequences, because they're these books are very therapeutic for me to write in many ways. And we've seen a lack of accountability really from the end of World War II up to today with our senior level military leaders, intelligence officials, of course, with elected representatives. But in these pages, I get to hold some of these people accountable for what they do. And of course, it's a completely fictional narrative, but there are some whispers of truth that are woven into the storyline, not just in this book, but in all of them. And very therapeutic to write, because I get to do things in these novels that would put me in jail forever if I was to do them in real life.
Well, Jack, what I find interesting, though, is though they are fiction, as you said, these are fictional stories, you can always tell, and specifically in your work, that this is, though, coming from a place of knowledge. This is someone who you have a background in this. This isn't someone coming up. Even in our world, I feel like whenever I read a book or watch a movie that's supposed to be based in the world of politics or the world of religion or whatever it is, it's like you can there's like tells that this person really has no idea how this all works. What I like about your material, and I like you said, I was listening to an interview you did on Pat McAfee from a few weeks ago, and you're like, it's also the most brutal book I've ever written. You're like, okay, well, people have seen The Terminal List. That's even, you know, stepping it up.
Yeah, but it didn't start out that way. It started out just, what I do is I have that title. I have a theme. I have a one-page executive summary. I take that. I turn that into the outline. And then I take the outline and turn that into the narrative. And even at the outline stage, I didn't know this was going to be the longest book to date, nor did I know that it was going to be the most brutal to date. But that's how it turned out, because it's all about the story and honoring that story. And this one just needed to go to those different levels to move that story along, continue to develop the protagonist along his journey, because he's on a journey just like all of us are in life. And he's taking the lessons from his past experiences, whether they're successes or failures, and applying those going forward as wisdom. So that's one of the reasons that I think the book, the books in general, have resonated with people, is because we're all on this journey. And so is my character. He's not the same character from the first novel as he is in this one. He's evolving along the way. He's adapting. He's learning. He's a student of warfare. I'm a student of warfare. I'm a student of my craft now, of writing, and also just in general, wanting to be a better person each day. Just like in the SEAL teams, wanting to be a better leader, a better operator each day. That's what you owe the people who you're taking downrange to Iraq and Afghanistan, in my case. But with my readers now, that's what they deserve. They deserve a better book this time than they got last time, because I'm evolving also as an author and as a human. So it's a blast to write these things. But this one ended up being particularly brutal.
I think what's interesting about this one too, and this is, again, not to give it away, but it's got a lot of very modern, timely themes. So you're able to get these books out in a sense where it also is very relevant to what we are experiencing. So for our audience, obviously, they're news junkies. They're in the politics and that world. And so for them to see the tie-ins in this book, specifically in Only the Dead, to kind of the world feeling like it's on the brink of war, yeah, which we are living in right now. At least it feels like that all the time. The U.S. not as strong as we once were, or at least feels that way. Other countries not treating us the same way. Inflation is in part of that. I mean, all of these issues are built into the new book, Only the Dead. So for our audience who might not be as familiar with this kind of work, I think they're going to be really, they'd be really interested in this book, because even if this is new to them, or they know the Terminal List, but maybe not the other books, I encourage you to check out the books. Are always, you get more deep into it as well. And that's fun. But for them, I think it's very of the time. We'll say it that way.
It's very natural for me to weave in current events and my take on current events, try to put myself in the enemy's shoes, looking at those current events, because they're on my mind as a citizen as I'm typing these things, meaning that they're also on the mind of my protagonist, James Reese. So it's very natural to have him thinking these things through, to bring in other characters who can add value, maybe explains a few things, like in this book, the financial markets and what that meant for gas and oil when Russia invaded Ukraine. If they were going to project our response in sanctions, what would they have set up ahead of time with sales futures to China and to India in particular. So I get to weave all these things in. I get to go deep. I get to study. I get to conduct interviews with subject matter experts in these fields and then weave them all into the storyline. So for me, I'm learning as I go along as well. Hopefully my readers are learning a little bit as we go along on these, through these, on these journeys with this story, through the eyes of the protagonist, but also through the eyes of the enemy. And I think it's very important to be able to look at things through the eyes of your enemy, because that allows you to make more educated decisions and wiser decisions, both on the battlefield and at the negotiating table.
One of the, you brought up the kind of topics that are popping right now. Obviously, the conversation around artificial intelligence has really taken off over the last few months as it's become kind of consumer, you know, focused, where all of a sudden we all have access to it. It's not some distant thing in the future. I know in your in the last book, Before Only the Dead, that was a big topic, and that was a year ago, a year plus ago. Now we're seeing the rapid acceleration of AI in terms of how we're going to deal with it. You know, a lot of issues are you can't put the ship back in the bottle, and that's one of my big concerns. I look at it and go, this could be one of our biggest changes in our lifetime, at least, in terms of the way that we all interact with each other, the way we create, the way we talk, especially for you as a writer even. But you also focused on the last book, and I think it could be interested in how it could be used from a military point of view and how it's already being kind of used in military. This always sort of happens. The military gets it, then, you know, the government gets it, then it goes, and then all of a sudden consumers get it. We all go, wait a second, this is what we've been dealing with? This is what we're talking about?
No, absolutely. I went deep down the rabbit hole on artificial intelligence and quantum computing in the last book. It's something I didn't have a touch point with in the military, so I had to conduct quite a few interviews. And those before those interviews, I have to do a lot of research so that I can ask educated questions of whoever I'm talking to. And when you're talking to somebody in the national security space about quantum computing and artificial intelligence, especially last year or a year and a half ago when I was writing those parts of the book, they all leave a little something out because it's very top secret and they don't want to give too much away. But if you talk to enough of them, they all give you a little tiny crumb, a little tiny morsel, and you can start piecing this puzzle together. So in that last book, I would be shocked if the facility that I describe at Lackland Air Force Base isn't almost exactly as I describe it in the novel. And of course, this January, when really the ChatGPT thing started hitting the front pages and popping up on everyone's phone and became a topic of conversation, my phone started blowing up because of the last book and the topics of the last book. And I didn't anticipate it coming into the mainstream the way it has. I was focused on the military side of it. I was focused on the intelligence apparatus side of it. I was focused on where China is with their quantum computing capability and their AI capability in comparison with us. And just over this last year and a half, it has obviously exploded and is now a part of our lives. And it's not a question of should we or could we, it's here. And it's a question of management. And this writer strike that we have going on right now in Hollywood, that's one of the big topics. The streaming side of things for writers had been building up for a while. And then when AI hit in January, those are two gigantic topics that they need to figure out. And I think going forward, we're going to see a whole lot of other industries and other unions attached to other industries have to deal with AI as well. So at this point, it's really about management from our perspective here as citizens.
It's one of those things where if this is your small business, you're building your business right now, all of a sudden there's a lot of jobs that may not be needed with AI. And it's kind of concerning because obviously we need jobs in the country, but also you can't blame small business going, well, I can now utilize this new tool in my tool belt. And that's going to be this whole conversation that's going to go back and forth. Yeah. But I'm glad you're able to address these in your books and also address it in these kind of conversations because people aren't thinking about it necessarily even in that broader military term. And then obviously you have a show like The Terminalist, which takes off. And what I loved about The Terminalist was also sort of how it kind of bucked Hollywood in some traditional sense, which, I mean, obviously I'm a consumer, a filmmaker. But the fact that the audience response just destroyed any sort of negativity that came with it was just phenomenal to see.
Season and a prequel.
Well, that shows that, you know, I have obviously Amazon fully behind it, which is awesome, but that the audience is making these decisions now. And the audience decided that, yes, The Terminalist is not only something we like, but we love. And that is really refreshing. Maybe that's the benefit of sort of the streaming era too, is the audience is louder than ever and way louder than the reviewers.
That's true. And they might even know how much of an impact they have because Amazon, all these streaming services, they have the data and they're not going to share it. They're going to keep it very close hold, but they know exactly how many minutes or seconds people watch and when they turn things off and when they get back to them. They've got all that data. And they took a risk with us on The Terminalist because we did a few things that you wouldn't normally do in a show like this. There are certain rules in Hollywood when it comes to screenwriting and storytelling, and we broke quite a few of them. And they were a little nervous on some of these, but they went along with us on every single one, to Amazon's credit. And they have those numbers. They'll never share, but there's a reason we're getting a second season and a prequel origin story out of it, because there's a lot of people that really responded to the material and had a great time. And for us, we really wanted to make it not for critics. We wanted to make it for that person who went downrange to Iraq and Afghanistan over the last 20 years. So when they sat on their couch and cracked open that beer and turned this thing on, they'd at least know that we made the effort to make a show for them and really root it in the realities of modern warfare and explore the mind of a modern day warrior. So it was never about the critics, and Chris and Antoine made that very clear in every single planning meeting that we would have. They would always bring us back to that. Who are we making this for? Let's make it for that person who went downrange time and time again, and now they're home and they're sitting on that couch and they're putting their feet up and they're clicking on this thing, and let's make this for them. Make sure that they are going to enjoy this show. And so that was what it was all about. So to see the critics hate it and the audience love it, that for us was the best feeling in the world.
It's icing on the cake. That's the best part. It is the audience's response. And we even talked about, as we were going through all your facts, and I don't know if people understand sort of, like I said, the minutes thing. When you see 1 billion minutes, Jordan even was like, that's how they're tracking this? By like minutes? Like, oh yeah, it's being tracked. Yeah. We're never going to know, but it's tracked exactly, you said, to the second of, all right, this person completed 65% of it. They turn, so it really is the audience moving the needle here now in the streaming kind of war. And I love that part of it. But we're gonna, maybe we'll talk too nerd out too much about that. But we do got to get back at least to the book.
This is a part I think too our audience will love if they already are familiar and they're already reading it. Maybe they watched the show but haven't read the books yet. But as you pointed this out, I just wanted to kind of bring it up just in case people didn't catch it totally. But it gives you this opportunity to hold folks accountable that in the real world we don't always get to hold accountable for either very bad decisions or almost even worse than that. I mean, decisions that are almost criminal feeling that they put our troops in or they put our soldiers in. We all see that from time to time. Not that, of course, our leaders have to make tough calls, and that's why we have a military. But sometimes it's like they're making such reckless decisions or the lack of planning, and then we're just putting people in just horrendous situations and we don't have their back. In these books, you get some vengeance there that we might not always get in the real world.
And I can take those feelings and emotions from real life and apply them to a fictional narrative, not necessarily for the exact people or positions that have avoided accountability in the public space or in any space, really. But let's go back to the end of World War II. For some reason, there's a lack of accountability moving forward. Really, 1947, when we reorganized the military, reorganized our intelligence apparatus, for some reason, these professions became careers. And moving like George Marshall in the lead up to World War II and during World War II, he held leaders accountable. And there's a reason that we know these names, these admirals and generals that led us to victory in World War II. Well, they didn't start in those positions. And that's because someone else was there who didn't measure up. George Marshall held them accountable, moved them aside, put somebody else in who could get the job done and led us to victory in World War II. For whatever reason after that, things started to change. And we got to see 20 years of it in Iraq and Afghanistan. And you can go back. There's a great book called The Afghanistan Papers by Craig Whitlock. And he got through two Freedom of Information Act requests and lawsuits. He got these classified oral histories of, in this case, Afghanistan. And he juxtaposed what these generals and admirals are saying when they come back and what they thought was going to remain classified and what they were saying in front of Congress. And they're 180 out from one another. And you can play any of these testimonies and they all sound exactly the same. Just need more troops, need more funding. The Afghan National Army is making progress. We're making progress. And the same thing that you play in 2005 is the same thing that you hear in 2009 is the same thing you hear in 2013. And then we get to the withdrawal where someone who has no touch points with the military, has never served, has never read a book on strategy or tactics, never even seen a military movie, can look at it and apply common sense and ask the question, why did we give up this tactically advantageous position in Bagram and put our young men and women in this tactically disadvantageous position at the airfield in Kabul? And you can apply common sense to this and then ask those questions and then realize, wait a sec, these people had 20 years to plan for this eventuality and this is the best they could do. And now no one is held accountable, which tells all the people in line for these senior positions that they just better toe the line and they'll be just fine. But if you speak out, as one person did in 2009, I want to say, 2009, 2010, and he didn't even say anything too bad. He was in charge of Afghanistan, and he said something along the lines of, this isn't going as well as you have been led to believe. That's it. And he was quietly moved aside a couple months later. And so that tells everybody else coming up that, oh, I better just toe this line if I want to make this next star and then sit on the board of this defense company in retirement. They better not get out of line. So anyway, for me, I get to deal with that in the pages of these novels, and it ends up being extremely therapeutic.
In reality, we were told Afghanistan that we had time to withdraw, that the Taliban, you know, was going to take time before they could actually take Kabul. They took Kabul in 24 hours. We were told in Russia and Ukraine, Russia was going to invade and that would be done in days. And now it's gone on for over a year. I mean, and a lot of this is, are we just being fed bad? Is our intelligence that bad? Or are we just being fed bad intelligence publicly by people who do know the truth, but are kind of misleading us publicly? And that's a question we always kind of grapple with. And we've got a lot of former intel people on our team here,
sure,
that we work with.
All different walks. And we we actually did, you brought up the Afghanistan, we did a documentary series where we interviewed a bunch of people, including Tulsi and Mike Pompeo and all these different people about the process that everything was going through Rick Grinnell. But it was also eye-opening, I think, for a lot of people. There's a whole generation that grew up in the post really war on terror, post 9/11 world. They were little kids or not born. So when they saw that moment in Afghanistan, I think there was a lot of reaction to that. And your books kind of touch on that sentiment and that feeling. And we do want to give you a minute here, at least, to just straight up promote, because Only the Dead is out now. It is available at all, however retailers you get your books from. Do you have a specific place you want to point people? I don't even think you need me saying this, but there are plenty of places to pick up your latest.
Yeah, anywhere people get their books, but also the audiobook, extremely popular. Ray Porter, amazing guy. He's my narrator, has been with me from the beginning. He absolutely crushes it on the audiobook side. But I like to always point people towards small independent bookstores, just because it's not the easy button, and it takes a little more effort. But there's some things you can get at independent bookstores that you can't get anywhere else, like a shot through copy of the novel. I shot through the title page and Simon & Schuster at publication. Bound them in, and I send those only to independent bookstores, just to give people a reason to go take that extra step and support those local independent bookstores rather than pressing the easy button. Amazon's going to be fine if you get a book from a couple independent bookstores. You don't have to lose any sleep over that. But I love those small bookstores and try to hit as many of them I can on tour, and also send a little something out there, like these shot through pages or book plates that you can only get from them. But everything can be found on officialjackcarr.com.
We'll make sure we push
the collection, and a lot of some of the proceeds that go to also the charities helping veterans, so people can check that out. They like the branded tomahawks. They're very popular in our office. The tomahawk is very popular here. We got a lot of folks who are like, I got to get my tomahawk.
Yeah, so just keep it at your desk.
And they were super excited when we told people we were going to be talking to you. They're super.
Oh, he's got pumped up.
So yeah, that's a little whiskey right there. These guys, Hoot and Young, remember Norm Hooten? He was Hoot in Black Hawk Down, played by Eric Bana. Well, he was a Delta Force guy, has a whiskey company. So now we have this collaborated on a whiskey together, and that's been a lot of fun. So a lot of all that stuff can be found on the website. But I love doing all this sort of thing. I love writing. It's my passion. My mission is taking care of my family. Gives me my purpose going forward. And everybody's been so amazing, because before Chris tweeted about the show or put on Instagram that we had a show, before I was on Joe Rogan, before I was on Tucker, it was really somebody taking a risk on me as a new author and telling a friend, telling a coworker, telling a family member. And really, that's what established this foundation. And the books hit the New York Times list before Tucker or Joe or Chris said anything about them. So that for me means more than anything else.
Thank you, Jack, so
much. We appreciate it.
It was awesome to have you on, and we'll obviously keep spreading the word. And thank you. We appreciate, again, everything you've done for our country, and also the great entertainment you've provided to all of us, which is, you know, I love, the last few years has been really needed, even just to take your mind off something and get something really fun and interesting to watch or to read. And we really appreciate it. Thanks, Jack.
Thank you so much. Sincerely appreciate it, too. Take care out there.
Soon. Jack Carr, thank you so much. That was awesome. Very cool. You know, we'll continue on and chatting, but I look forward to diving in on this one and finding out about it.
Yeah, when we were talking around our team, staff, it was not politics, but for our podcast, we do some different stuff.
Yeah.
And as we're developing the podcast, as we're kind of like working through, it's like, because we're doing the daily radio every day for everybody. That's kind of like the timely of news of every breaking news or what the ACLJ is doing. We are working. Logan and I have been talking about this a lot, about the kind of guests we'd want to bring on for you that are different than the people you'd usually think we talk to. Tulsi and those folks, but it's kind of like the next world. It's like, yeah, there's an entertainment world that I think you'd really like and that maybe you haven't seen. I think that we probably have a group of our audience that are big fans of this.
Yeah.
And half of our audience who probably never heard of this.
Yeah.
And they will like it.
Yeah, exactly.
You will like this book. It is written for you in the sense of, if you are a military, if you're a veteran or veterans family, we know how many are folks that support ACLJ and the work that we do, and we know how many of you serve, because how many times do their callers say, I mean, veterans, family members who are veterans, and as Jack said, he like writes this really starting point is like for them, which I think is why like people like Tulsi are still.
It's a huge group of people. I mean, that's
a huge group of people who have served
underserved
in wars that we grew up with. I think of guys I went to college with. I'm talking about undergrad, so we started college right before 9/11, and. You know, they went through the life. A couple of them became naval aviators, so fighter pilots. It's a very long path, even though I look back and I was following them on Facebook. And how different that was to become that, to decide to stay on that path.
Yeah.
When they started school, because they were already in the program when they started at like GW where I went. And a couple of them are fraternity brothers of mine. And, you know, they decided 9/11 happened. That before that, it was a fairly quiet world. There were some quiet times, I'd say.
Yeah.
Certainly the U.S. wasn't engaged in large scale.
It was a pop culture kind of silly time.
Yeah, we weren't engaged in large scale conflict where we had mass casualties. And, you know, they grew up. So they grew up in something different. We grew up with people coming home with PTSD. Still to this, we're still.
Still dealing with that.
Yeah, it's a very real thing that I think is real for our generation. But I think, you know, as our show, we keep developing our show for you. We're going to keep looking for these kind of
opportunities. Let us know. Yeah, let us know who you want to hear, because I think we are going to bring on some more guests and people that are doing interesting, even in the world of entertainment. I mean, Jack certainly is one of those. I was talking just yesterday to one of my friends who you guys really like. I should bring him on in the next few weeks. Oddly, an interview I did with him 3 years ago was starting to kind of blow up on YouTube over the week. I was like, why is this? Well, he was the voice of Prince Eric in The Little Mermaid, but he's kind of with us on a lot of the issues. Yeah. His name's Christopher Daniel Barnes, another guy out of Hollywood, and he has a new series called The Heretic Angel, and Angel spelled AI, and it's really the story of how AI is and could influence culture. It's fiction, but again, it's sort of, it's not dissimilar to this where it's fiction, but it doesn't feel like that too far away. So we're bringing him on too. There are people creating very interesting stuff in this space.
Yeah.
But that was cool to have Jack on, but we do need in a minute to talk about our friends at Birch Gold before it gets too late, because mm-hmm. if we don't, then they'll be upset and you'll be upset
Jack was actually talking about these kind of real world things that we're dealing with.
Yeah.
That he builds into the book. I think that's really cool. Like, but it's unfortunately things that are happening, like inflation, like a world that's right on the edge. And so our friends at Birch Gold think, hey, you know, maybe you need to think about diversifying your portfolio. Yeah. When we talk about gold, I always like to say this. One, these are our friends that keep us on the air, you know, that keep these shows out. That's part one. So if you've got time just to get the information about it and you like our show, it's a really easy thing to do. You know, you text that.
Yeah, they're just wanting to give you more information.
Right. That's all they're doing. All you're doing is get information, guide. And what I learned about first in this world, which I didn't know as much about, because I was probably like you, I saw these ads sometimes on TV, and I thought, man, I'll be kind of young. I don't really have the money yet to like invest in gold. I got some money tied up in some accounts, you know, some investment accounts and some 401ks, and that's great. But do I have time to really pick my own investments out? And what I learned about this was that, you could diversify an existing. So I don't have to have like, I don't have to find $25,000 to go figure out. I can diversify existing accounts, and I don't have to take all of it into gold and metals, but I could, you know, do something, have a little hedge of protection, if you will.
Yeah, so what we'll do is we'll just encourage you to text 989898. That's the number you text, and just put in the word BROS, B-R-O-S, as your message, and you'll get an immediate text back with information on how you're going to get your free info kit. They are A+, the Better Business Bureau. They've been around for years, hundreds of customers worldwide, and really are doing some amazing stuff. So check out Birch Gold by, again, the easiest way, just text 989898. Text the word BROS to 989898. And you'll get your free info.
Let's ask you this. I mean, you see like Top Gun.
Absolutely.
Okay, we see the Turbulence. Uh-huh. Okay, these shows that it does not matter what reviewers say. The reviewers do not matter, like the critics.
Yeah.
The audiences are, these are the biggest audience we saw. Top Gun, and which is a reboot of a 1980s.
I mean, Top Gun was I think, decently reviewed. I think it was something.
Yeah, but you know, I mean, it wouldn't have mattered.
No. The audience was there.
And what was refreshing about it is, it's not free from any politics, but it's not criticizing everything is on anti-American, anti-military. Yeah. It's
patriotic.
It's patriotic.
And I think that
it's like, but how long is it going to take for Hollywood to figure out, like, hey, maybe if we put out 5 or 6 of these, we'd be in a better financial spot than putting out a bunch of stuff, projects that are just woke projects they might get, the critics might like it, the New Yorker, but no one watches.
Well, I think who figured that out was Chris Pratt. And you see that.
Has.
I mean, you even see that with the Super Mario Brothers movie, which is free from any sort of political spin. There's nothing in that movie that you could walk away and go, my kids got fed an agenda.
It's hilarious.
It's just a fun, silly movie.
Kids loved it.
An IP, an intellectual property that was beloved for 40 years, and they didn't ruin it. They didn't go in there and make giant changes. It's exactly how you remember it as a kid. And, Chris Pratt has done that with that. He's done it, obviously, with The Terminalist. He has done it with plenty of his work and his public portfolio, persona, being someone who is a faith and being someone who is not afraid to talk about things and is not getting political. I think that's the weird part, is Chris Pratt doesn't really get political, but by not getting political, he therefore, you know, is hated on. But,
oh, right. And since they say, well, he must be.
He must, because he didn't do the fundraiser for the DNC, he must be a conservative. And he kind of is like, no, just how about being a celebrity who's above all of this? I think Hollywood is waking up from some sense in this side, but yeah, they're all in this.
We talk about a different side of this, which is probably not the side I'm as tuned into, but there are a lot of faith movies, a lot of these faith networks coming out. They're doing really well.
And those are funded a lot of the times by the major studios.
So they are figuring it out to extent.
Yeah, I mean, Sony is who made the Jesus.
Do you think they're just scared to like promote it to know that it's too much then?
Well, Lionsgate, any of these ones are making the most successful Christian movies. Yeah, you can have a conversation.
Like scared of being too out that, oh, this is really us?
Oh, I think that there is that.
They try to hide it?
There's the, well, the different problem LLCs. Is that there's, no, I think some of it is also there's the audience that there's going to go see it, and then that's not, this sounds bad. Sometimes it's not the audience that, you know, the corporation wants.
I get it.
It's the audience that the corporation has. Who goes to see most movies? You know, not people in LA and New York, they're big markets for sure. But, you know, that's not your core demographic for an action
film. Who head out on a Thursday night.
Or fun.
Or Friday night. No.
No. So they know this and they are starting to react. But the problem is they've gone so far down sort of the rabbit hole of this, of the agenda-based stuff, that getting out of it, it's going to take some pretty, pretty big moves.
Yep.
And you have to see some success stories really come out of it.
It's the kind of these.
It's success. The Terminalist, which again, if you were to judge it just on the reviews, gets destroyed.
Worked.
20%, whatever it is, reviewers liked it.
A prequel and a second season.
Right. But the audience said, no, we love this.
Give me more.
And we want more of it. So
basically forced.
So Amazon has to go, well, of course, that's how we make money. We don't make money off of the New York Times reviewing this or whoever negatively reviewed it. We make money on, did people use our services? And did that bring them back into Amazon to then purchase more goods? I think it's pretty cool
that there's this whole world I like Jack, and one of the reasons I really I like Tulsi, I wanted to bring her onto our team more, because I love the idea that you could be a patriotic American, and they are the most. I mean, literally, she still serves. She did training this week. Jack was serving until 2016 in the Navy SEALs.
Right.
I mean, you could be the most patriotic American who have put your life on the line the most and question decision makers.
Yeah.
And question, because when they're in the military, you don't get to do that. You're given orders. You're supposed to, you know, you take your orders out. But like he said, through the book, it's a little bit of like a cathartic process because he can finally question those
people. Yeah, and they're very creative people. You know, you think of military being just sort of hard nosed. You know,
we were talking about the boxes you have to check to become a Navy SEAL. Even when they talk about lowering the standards, of it's not just brute force, but the mind that you have to have.
Yeah,
it's pretty intense.
Yeah, it makes for great entertainment as well. So we appreciate Jack coming on. And if you like this and you like guests, let us know. Share us and let us know if there's other guests that you would like us to have on. Because Jack, we booked just a couple days ago, and it's very cool to have him on and other people that can just pop in, not only to promote their latest project, but just to have some.
And there's more folks willing to come on and talk to people like us.
Yeah.
Which is cool. Because this project, it's like they're not being constrained anymore to say, don't go on those shows.
Yeah. Well, he's like, I'm sure it was like they could send him to Tucker and they could send Chris Pratt to Jimmy Fallon, you know, and they could promote it, you know, to both sides. It's pretty cool. And they can't say no to Chris Pratt. So that's also.
Just can't say no to Chris. How could
no,
I?
No,
I
he's the best.
Could anybody say no to
he's
Chris
the best.
Pratt?
I don't know him. I mean, now we're one step closer to him, but I don't know him. But all I know is that I love him.
All I know is that I don't know
all
him.
All I know is that I love him.
And I love him since Park and Rec.
Oh, yeah,
Parks and Rec. I'm just happy that the guy from Parks and Rec, who was the lovable boyfriend, became a superhero.
I know, and he's the best, and he's just, I love him.
So and believable great. Superhero. Mm-hmm. So quite a transformation.
Oh, yeah, he got
was also just shredded. Acting ability, too.
Oh, yeah.
I mean.
And that, like, sort of, you could have sort of these more comedic characters.
I always
too,
think
pop
those
in.
Comedic characters actually the smartest actors.
Yeah.
Because you can do that, and you can then become these intense roles, and I don't know if the intense roles are actually as hard for him.
Well, it's very cool. And he's, married to Arnold Schwarzenegger's daughter. So, I mean, he's got the action hero now, like the blood.
Back also.
Yeah, he's back. I watched his new series.
I like that.
It's fun. Yeah, it's fun.
Bring us back. Yeah. We need more. I mean, Harrison Ford is young again.
I mean, he's like a Kennedy also. I mean, think about that. I mean, Chris Pratt is married to, I mean, that's pretty intense. I mean, he's getting himself in there.
RFK Jr.
Yeah.
Again.
Now another name that we're seeing there.
Really,
count about that. That's what's going to happen. We're going to flash forward 10 years from now. It's going to be The Rock versus Chris Pratt for president. We'll see that happen.
Tulsi would definitely be involved there.
Yeah, she probably would be. She could be involved in both. It's fine.
Yeah, that's true.
You know. I think I've seen them both promote each other's content. All right.
Yes.
And Rogan will be there. Secretary of State.
Secretary of State Rogan.
Secretary of State Joe Rogan would be great. All right, let's wrap up.
Our Secretary of State, he's high.
Yeah, all the time. He's on what? DMT or whatever.
So, by then, that ayahuasca will be old news. Oh,
no one's doing that anymore.
Like, what are we tripping on? How do I go on a multi-year? He's like, there's people in the experiment in the UK to get the constant drip of
DMT or whatever. I want to talk to frog people all
the time.
They're
constantly living in a reality, but they're able to bring it back. Like,
the press conferences, like the press secretary comes in, they're just like 5.5 hours. They go on and on. They're just like, man, he's not stopping. We asked one question, this thing keeps going.
So. Well, I'm going to bring in a guy.
Yeah.
Bring in a mushroom expert.
Yeah. Yeah, that and Tim Dillon will be there.
Okay, do not eat raw portobello mushrooms. Why? I can't. They'll kill me.
Yeah. Okay. You can't say it.
That's real. That was a real Joe Rogan episode.
Well, there you go.
They would create a whole thing on the internet, and there is a thing that you've been... It's not that a raw portobello is going to kill you, but it's not great to eat raw.
Okay, good to know. I don't eat a lot of them, but I will keep me aware. All right, we'll talk to you next time on the Secular Brothers Podcast. Thanks for listening.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.